Chapter 5. Blood and Mud. They vainly purify themselves by defiling themselves with blood, just as if one who had stepped into the mud would wash his feet in mud. And they pray to these images, as if one were to talk with a man's house, knowing not what gods or heroes are. Go to the place where you first saw her, and bathe with her there. So the village hetman had said when he went before him. He had brought two rugs, woven from goat hair, and a sea otter skin. In the gloom of the large house in the village, the words had seemed too prescient, and had hung in the air like the smoke which slowly drafted out over the racks of blackberries and through the smoke hole on the top of the building. The smell of burning cedar lazily followed him across the waves, as he rowed around the small headland to his separate home, set a small distance apart from the village. The winds were stable in the afternoon, the waters rippling with the forced calm of late summer. High above, cirrus clouds hung like ribs from the rafters of the sky, and as he headed to the east, he could see the bowl of the sea turning up, a couple of miles in the offing. On top of the headland, the watchlight was burning in preparation for the night. He averted his eyes as he saw the small figure of the Maker there, and rode on faster. "Go to that place," the headman had said. That night, he continued his work on the main beam in front of the house. He carved slowly, his fingers unused to such work. Each stroke was small and considered, and the repetitive motion was soothing as the sound of waves. The mouth, the lines for whiskers, the form of a fish, hanging half out between the canines. The seal was almost beginning to take shape before he retired with the last light of the sun. Patting the seal snout softly, he looked at the tapering top of the column, where he hoped to carve a goose for her. The wood from the lightning-bitten tree was cracked and graying, but it would serve, he thought to himself, before going inside to sleep on the pallets heaped with skins. He rose early, and woke her in the nautical twilight before the sun had risen. Together they took the narrow path through the old oak, cedar, and pine woods to the place where the stream pooled and rustled beneath a small waterfall. The broad branches of an oak tree overhung the cold pool, and the early wind was blowing in his reddening hands. The gentle cascade of water filled the air when the wind calmed. The lichen hung like the heaven's beard with the moss in the branches. From somewhere, a scrub jay shouted in the wood. Dewdrops still hung on the few lady slipper orchids on the verge. Their reflections trembled as she entered the water. "Come in," she said. Her hair, like fire, licked the small of her back, covering her narrow freckled shoulders. As she moved deeper, it clung to the skin when it did not float like leaves in autumn. He sat on the edge of the pool, his bare feet resting on two stones blanketed in green moss. She paused and turned. He thought to himself how all the conversations were similar. She flowed, paused, and turned. At the thought, he smiled smallly to himself. "I'm fine right here." Her teeth shone through her open lips like white driftwood on sand. The corners of her mouth turned up, and her eyes glinted with amusement. "Oh, really?" Her fingers flicked the water, splashing his face with cool droplets. A smile came unheralded, and in an attempt at making it appear genuine and larger than his thoughts, he turned it into a wide, shallow grin. She splashed him again, this time with the whole of her hand cupping the water into flight. He stood up and moved further up the bank. He sat down in her skins she had brought against the cold. "You're mine now." Her smile flashed again, and turning, she dove into the darker end of the pool. Her white limbs shone through the clear depths like salmon in the fall, riding against the current. As bubbles rose from her figure, his smile faded. This was the pool where he had found her years ago while hunting alone. He had seen her bathing, cleaning off the first blood. Within a month, he had spoken the words before the headman with her, and they had been wed, a woman of his own to bear children and his head at night as he lay on her freckled knees. She was no longer that girl, he thought. But no children had come. And so here he was, The leaves blew on in the wind, the unchanging rustling, their fingers red from the cold. The hanging lichen rode the morning sun. His arms were sore from the carvings of the previous night, so he stretched them, as if aiming an arrow at her, as her face surfaced for air. "My gosling," he whispered, releasing the imaginary string. She laughed loudly, and it seemed to him that the water dripped off the orchids in response. The water flowed off her hair, following the ripples into the pool where she had captured him. The flow of the stream rolled on, uninterrupted, into the incipient turbid darkness of the bay. In his mind, the dripping sound echoed his blood beating in his chest, like the pitter-patter of tiny, perfect feet.